Well, my name is John O'Leary, and let me tell you a few things about myself. I call myself somebody who hails from Oklahoma. I wasn't born there. I was born in Florida, but I lived and I grew up and went to college in the state of Oklahoma. And I actually liked growing up in Oklahoma, but if you ever visit Oklahoma, most people say, how could you like this state? To which I say, well, you have to grow up here to like it. So I don't think that's true about Arkansas. I will tell you that the favorite place, I've lived in, let's just say, nine or so places, and Little Rock is my favorite place I've ever lived. And I just, it's just a hidden, Arkansas is a hidden jewel in the 50 states, I think. So I love living here. I have a wife. We've been married 13 years, my wife Ashley, and then we have three little ones, and they're in fourth grade, fifth grade, and sixth grade. So there's always a ton of stuff going on in our house, such as yesterday, two football practices at the same time. Mom just hoping that everybody stays out of Tad's office again. So I, one of the things I tell you is I've worked here, I've been with Fellowship for 9 years, my first three were in Cabot, and the Lord rescued me out of Cabot and brought me to Little Rock. That is funny, but I really feel that, so... I hope Jake, you're not recording this, but one of the things I'd say about being here at Fellowship is the opportunity that I have to get in front of guys, to get in front of other folks and encourage them in their faith. That's what I really want to do, is I want to help us as men begin to understand what is it God's calling me to do. If I had to tell you guys, what's the number one thing that I run into with guys? The number one thing I run into with guys is, hey, I know the God subject is important, but I often don't know what to do when I get to that subject. And so a lot of times I'll default somewhere else. Hey, one of the things I'm so excited about what we're doing in this identity series is it addresses what is it that God is calling you to do as a man at a fundamental level. And that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to unpack in the 6 weeks together is what is it about who I am that God can use and that God has actually given me and ordained and designed. And a lot of times what we do is we default to things that we're more familiar with. Isn't it true that at your tables, you will talk about things that don't matter unless somebody pushes you to talk about something that matters? Is that true? I find it's really true in my life. Like, it's really easy for me to talk about fantasy football, especially when I win. Well, this isn't one of those weeks, so I have nothing to say. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't know if you know Clayton Seiler here on our staff. He's a worship pastor. I'm embarrassed to say he beat me this week, you know? It's like his first time. He has no idea what he's doing. He drafts a kicker in the second round. He beats me. That's embarrassing. I'm just saying, I just want you guys to give me grace as I want to talk about something more meaningful because the surface level stuff's kind of embarrassing me right now. So let's talk about something more meaningful. Well, today's topic, let me start by saying this. There was a time in the not so distant past where we could have talked about what does it mean to be a man? And many of us would have come to similar conclusions. Many of us would have come to conclusions that were all roughly the same thing about our conclusion on, hey, what does it mean to be a man? But the truth is, manhood, it's not in a great place. Manhood, we would say, is a bit of in crisis. And here's what this causes. There's a lot of confusion in our culture about manhood. And if you've ever gone to the internet, if you've ever gone to the internet, you've looked and watched guys, you've seen stories of guys just blowing up their lives and just going off the rails. Well, one of the things that reminds me when guys go off the rails is in my own personal time right now, I'm reading through the Old Testament. And one of the things that continues to stick out to me as I'm reading through the Old Testament is this theme. And the theme is, hey, remember what God has done. Remember what God has done, because left to yourselves, you will wander. Remember what the Lord has done. I even wrote down a few verses that I remembered and that I found about just when are we told that? Well, Deuteronomy 8 says this: remember how the Lord your God led you all the way. He guided you in the desert for those 40 years. Remember, he guided you. just as parents guide their children. Psalm 105:5 says, remember the wondrous works that he has done, his miracles, and the judgments he's uttered. Remember. Joshua 4 talks about building an altar to the Lord. Remember, there were these 12 stones that they put in the Jordan. And remember, they said, we need to build a kind of an altar, a monument to the Lord. Why? Why are we doing this? So that when your children ask their fathers in the times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you let your children know Israel passed over the Jordan on dry ground. Remember what God did to provide for the Israelites to go over and cross the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried the waters and you passed over. And that all the peoples of the earth, here's why that happened. That all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. That you may fear the Lord your God. Remember. Numbers 15 actually talks about wearing these tassels on the corner of their robes. And they said, wear these tassels because if you wear these tassels, it will proclaim that generation after generation, it will help you remember what the Lord has done. You will not follow after your own heart. Men, the truth is, left to ourselves, we will follow after our own hearts. I don't think that's a surprise to us. I think if you think about, okay, what do I really like to do? You think, I like to do whatever I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it. I wish I would have put this sign up. I wish I would have taken a picture of this. I have this on my phone. I'd love to show it to you. Maybe I'll bring it up another week. But it says this. It says, there's a billboard, and it says something like, 98% of men die due to stubbornness. It was advertising something. And they said like something like 98% of men die due to stubbornness. Some guy goes up to that sign and spray paints, no, we don't. And I'm like, isn't that true? It's like, you can give us a statistic. You can tell me to my face, that's wrong. And we will still buck the system because left to ourselves, we'll follow our own way. Well, here's the truth. Both sides, the cultural left and the cultural right, have a distorted view of manhood. So here's what happens. The cultural left and the cultural right, if you've watched the news any time in the last year, you've seen this wrestle about what we think the definition of manhood is. So here's how they distort it. The cultural left says this. They say manhood and womanhood, you know what? It's basically the same thing. There are no distinctives. The cultural left says it's about the same thing. There's nothing unique and overly distinctive about either sex. Now, gender identity is, we're not going to get into the gender identity discussion here. Now, it's part of this, but that's not the battle that we're going to battle in this series. But no doubt that's a big deal. But the cultural left distorts the role of men and the role of women. But the cultural right, it's equally as destructive. Because the cultural right says, look, the ideal, the great picture of a man is a conqueror. The great picture of a man is, it's about sex, money, and power. And so the cultural right, what they're saying is, it's about being tough and who you are. Did anybody watch the events and the fight, the latest boxing event with Mayweather versus McGregor? I mean, was there more of a picture of just a parade of manhood walking around between both of those guys? And if you saw the pre-events, those guys would show up to those events and they would just try to belittle the other person and make them feel, look small, didn't they? I mean, what a picture of this kind of distorted view of what a man does. I mean, one of the pre-events, I was like, is that guy in his underwear? It's like, what is he doing? Well, he's just trying to make the other person feel small. Well, that's a distorted view of manhood, where on one side you're saying there's no difference. And then on the other side, you're saying you have to be this tough and this kind of guy to be a man. Men don't cry. We've heard that before, haven't we? And just so you know, that's totally distorted. Men cry. And yes, it's okay for a man to cry. But both sides distort how we see it, and it leads to confusion, and it's destructive. Many of us would say this is true, but there's been a breakdown in our social structures. Something else we see that leads to the confusion about manhood is there's a breakdown in our social structures and the support of healthy manhood. One third of all children in the U.S. grow up in a home without both parents. One third grow up in a home without both parents. And then you've got single parents, you've got blended families, all kinds of things that lead to who is it that God is calling me to be? Who am I? And I don't know if you've wrestled with that question of who you are, but a lot of times my main wrestle with who I am has a lot to do with, you know, who do you think I should be? Who do you think? Yeah, so I may get in front of you and say, who do you think is, you know, honorable, respectable, worthy of your time? And sometimes what we do is we distort who we are by trying to fit into who we think that you want us to be. And I know as guys, we would rarely admit that, but so often I think we leave ourselves to try to be somebody else that is worthy of respect when really we're really living over here. And we're not happy in either place. I'm not happy over here because I don't think anybody is really going to respect me like I want. And then I'm not really happy over here because it's not who I was created to be. It leads to all this kind of confusion. And a lot of it has to do with how we grew up and what we saw. Hey, manhood is not being modeled by fathers. This is something that a lot of people have seen, would agree with. And it's because maybe dad was unaware, uninvolved, or just plain absent. There's this modeling aspect that we look to, and a lot of times it's absent. And so our thoughts about what a man is really get shaped about how we grow up, doesn't it? And so, for example, my dad turns 80 this next year. And so my dad had this view of manhood as my dad was the provider. My dad went to work. And then he came home and he talked to my mom, he ate dinner, and then he started over the next day. My dad was a worker. And so a lot of what I saw about what it means to be a man is just work hard. But my dad never taught me things like going hunting. We didn't live in Arkansas. Maybe it would have been different. I don't know. But we didn't go hunting ever. Well, I didn't have a picture of my dad showing me how to change the oil in my car. I didn't have a picture of my dad showing me how to fix things around the house, largely because he didn't know how to do it himself. But my picture of what it meant to be a man, a lot of what it was what I saw my dad doing or not doing. And so my dad was a worker. Hard work was kind of his game. And my dad loved his family. My dad wanted to care for his family, but he did that by working. Well, just in case you're wondering, nowadays, it's a totally different scenario. If you told your wife, let me see if this would work. Now, this is most of us in the room, but I'd say if you said to your wife, especially if you're 45 or younger, if you told your wife, hey, look, don't involve me with anything with the kids. I work. How's that going to go for you? Anybody else say that's going to go well for me? Yes. I mean, it's like I think one of the things that we do is when we look at what manhood was or maybe what we hoped it was, a lot of what we do is we run toward what we saw in our dad or we run away from what we saw in our dad. Because another thing I say about my dad, he's pretty authoritative. He's gave me clear, firm directives a lot. And some of us want what we saw in our dad, and we say, man, I want to model that. I want to do that with my family. I want to do that in my business relationships. But others of us are running, saying, I want nothing to do with that. Maybe it's because your dad left her at an early age. Maybe because, yeah, it had to do with a divorce in your family. Maybe it had to do with just the fact that he was in the house, but he was totally absent. But what we're doing is we're seeing in our own lives played out whether we want to be like our dad or whether we want to run from what our dad does. And then does anybody do what I do? I do something with my kids and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was my dad. You ever do that? You go, there it is, right there. And so a lot of us are playing tapes, which is a really normal thing to do. In fact, I would even say it's the right thing to do in the sense of men play a really big role in the lives of our kids. If you have kids, you know that you play a really big role, but just think about your relationship with your dad. Your mom could say, you need to do this. And you'd be like, yeah, okay, mom. But your dad says it, and even if you're like, whatever, You walk away going, maybe I should, maybe I should. Okay, he said that. It makes a big deal to us. It matters. And so what happens is that if I have a good relationship, I've got some good memories, and I've got some good rails to run on about, okay, what I think manhood is. But on the other side of that, there's a lot of us who don't have a great view of what that looks like. And so we kind of say, you know, I think I know what it is, but I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure. And really, this affects a lot of how we look at this. Hey, another thing we're seeing in our culture is we're seeing this thing, this phenomenon called extended adolescence. Extended adolescence by over-involved parents and then a lack of economic opportunities. But here's something I'd like to say in this, is that have you ever heard of the helicopter parent? The parent that hovers, you've heard that term? The helicopter parent? Well, there's an article I read, which I totally agree with, that says there's a new kind of parent out there. And you know what they are? They're the lawnmower parent. I don't know if you've heard of this, but they're the lawnmower parent. They're the ones mowing the grass before their kids. They're mowing the path so their kids can have a trouble-free, pain-free, easy existence. They're not only hovering, but they're going before, knocking out any barrier that may be in their way. My wife teaches sixth grade at a local school. There's nothing more true than the lawnmower parent. The things that she comes home and tells me about what a parent said are unbelievable about what parents are trying to do to make sure their kids have no struggles. Well, obviously this leads to this place where, let's say this a kid grows up, he goes to college, not sure what he wants to do in his life, has some hardships, doesn't know how to react to them, graduates. He graduates with a mere, the average college student graduates with $37,000 of debt at the end of college. The average graduates with $37,000 worth of debt. Well, they get out, they're $37,000 in debt. They look around at jobs. Many of them, they say, you know, I can't really find a job that I like. I can't find a job that I think's worth my talent, that pays enough. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back to grad school. I love the college gig. It seems to fit my schedule just fine. They go back to college. They get a graduate degree. They rack up another $30,000, $40,000 in debt. 3 years later, they're looking at their life and they're $80,000-something in debt. And their first job, you know what this leads to? I can't pay my bills. I'm going to live with mom and dad. You know what that leads to? I push off getting married, having kids, buying a house. Extended adolescence is this phenomenon in our culture that is delaying us growing into be the men God's calling us to be. And you know what? Social media doesn't help either. One of the things we see in social media is the overkill of social media keeps a man isolated. And I think we can relate to this isolation that social media leads us to. See, here's one of the things about social media. We can have, you know, everything's at our fingertips. Obviously, very destructive things are a button away. That's actually not this series, but we have talked about that in many of our series about what we look at on the internet. But what I'm talking about is this phenomenon of social media. The idea of posting pictures and what we're doing on vacation and how much fun we're having. And what we do is we think we are connected with a bunch of friends because I know what they're up to, they know what I'm up to. We feel like we're connected, but you know what? I haven't had a meaningful conversation with any of those people in years. And so what happens is that I'm connected to, you know, I think I have a lot of friends on Facebook, like 400, which I'm joking because I think now if you're under 40, I think, you know, the average number of friends is like 1,500 or whatever. It's just a ton of people. And you go, look, I got a bunch of friends. Well, the truth is you don't have any new friends. All your friends are people you used to know in the glory days. Remember back when you were somebody? When you were somebody in high school, when you were looking around at college going, oh my gosh, I'm kind of the king of my own universe. Those are the friends that you're connecting with. And a lot of times what that leads to is I feel like I'm connecting and friends with people. But the truth is there's no one in my own life challenging me, encouraging me to fight the good fight of faith, to trust that God's way is better than my way. Nobody's currently challenging me. And guys, this is why we're here this morning. It's because we all need other men pushing into our lives. And I do want you to get that picture, pushing into our lives. Because you know what? We're guys. We don't want anybody telling us what to do, right? Nobody tells us what to do. But we need other guys stepping into our lives saying, hey, how are you doing with that? How can I pray for you? How can I challenge you? How can you repent and confess sin and I still meet you where you are because I have an attitude of grace, because I meet you where Jesus meets me. Guys, it's going to be uncomfortable. Guys, we're not going to want to do it. But we see story after story about men blowing up their lives. And one of the main reasons is because they don't have anybody else keeping them on the rail saying, hey, I want to be part of your struggle. Hey, one of the things I'm really excited about these tables, this is where it's at in our study, these tables. The table leader has a lanyard on. He's your official table leader. But he's not just asking you questions. I'd love for you to see that table leader, somebody who says, you know what? They care about what's going on in my life. And that table leader may even reach out to you by texting you or emailing you. Hey, feel like this group of people you can maybe go to lunch with. Maybe you can talk about what's really going on. Because this is why we're here. Hey, if I say don't have isolated relationships and you're really isolated and then you have a problem and you're like, oh gosh, I need to talk to somebody. You don't have anybody to talk to. It's too late. What I want to encourage us is, that's why I really want to say, hey, we need guys to help us remember that God's way is better than my way. And one of the things I just want to invite all you all into my life is I want people to help me remember that you need Jesus and that you need help. You know why I know I need help? Because I'm broken, I'm a sinner, left to my own ways, I follow my own heart. And what we want to do from here, the question is, where do we go from this messed up confusion? Is I want us to just to know that all the examples I've been talking about are symptoms of the real problem. They're symptoms of the real problem. Because what we want to do in our time together is we want to talk about the problem. It's a man's heart. Our heart's the problem. It's not the internet, it's the problem. It's not the lack of this being true for my life or the lack of the dad in my life. Yes, those things are symptoms, but really what we want to do is talk about the heart. We naturally run from our true identity. We naturally run. Jeremiah 17 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. I want to read that again. Jeremiah 17 says this, the heart is deceitful above all things. Anybody found that to be true? The heart's deceitful. But then it says this, it's desperately sick. Who can understand it? If the Bible's true, if it's true, the Bible says that your heart's desperately sick. If the Bible's true, it says this, your heart's desperately sick. Is that true? Yes. Your heart is desperately sick. If that's true, I need other guys in my life. If that's true, I need other people to help me remember that God's way is better than my way. If that's true, I need to be rescued. If that's true, I need to be reminded. And that's what we want to do. But here's how we're going to do it. We're going to do it. This can only happen through the gospel of Jesus Christ. He can restore our manhood. I got good news for us, and then I'm done this morning. I got good news for us. Here's the good news. Manhood is not achieved. Manhood is not achieved. It's received. Here's the good news. Manhood, I don't have to go out and run and make myself who I'm supposed to be. Yes, that's our tendency. But I don't have to run and make myself who God wants me to be. You know what? I just have to receive what God has already given me in the active and the living work of Jesus Christ. The beauty of what we're going to talk about is this, is that left to yourself, in yourself, you can't achieve what God has for you. And some of you are saying, really, is that true? And I'm saying, you can't be who God's calling you to be if you try to do it yourself. But if you receive your true identity, that Jesus wants to live and work and actively in you, we can believe that Jesus wants to deliver us from our place of just a tendency to slide and do what we want to do. And we can live in the work that he is calling us to. But I think it's such good news that I don't have to do it. It's not on my back. For me to be a man is not to make sure I got good internet filters and make sure I'm a great dad, make sure I'm a great husband, and make sure I'm a great friend, and make sure I'm great work, and make sure I got all these balls in the air floating around, making sure that I'm strong enough and tough enough to do it, and make sure that I'm relatable, and make sure that I'm all these things. Guys, it's not achieved, it's received. And for some of us, we've got to figure out, what does it look like to receive what Jesus has already done and promised And that's what we're going to do in our time together. And that's why I'm excited about being here together with you guys, talking about, Lord, how is it that I can just receive what you've already promised? Isn't that encouraging? It's not on you. Well, Tad's going to come back up here and kind of encourage us in what we're going to do in our time together. But hey, guys, I look forward to spending the fall with you saying, hey, what is it that God's calling us to do?